The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Reminder, coverage of Game 6 of the NBA Finals starts at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, which you can also watch starting at 9 p.m. on ABC. Relive one of the greatest icons and most successful teams in sports history. You know who I'm talking about. Michael Jordan, the 97-98 Chicago Bulls. Stream the Emmy and NAACP Image Award-winning series, The Last Dance, on ESPN+. Hello, and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, and I'm home just for the briefest of times. I've been in Vegas, and I'm going to Tokyo in 2 days, but squeeze this one in. It's Monday afternoon, late afternoon. Joining us from Milwaukee, ahead of Game 6 of the NBA Finals, is Tim Bontemps.
Howdy, guys.
And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Admire your persistence to get to the home front today, Wendy. We're all proud of you.
Well, another writer who was covering Team USA in Vegas, flew to Hawaii today to spend a couple of days before going to.
Not a bad way to spend a 2 day layover.
Yeah, and I came home and my first flight got canceled because of a belligerent passenger, and it totally screwed my travel day. So I think he's got me on this.
I think you should say another belligerent passenger to specify that you weren't the one who caused the problem.
I'll tell you, it took a lot of restraint from a lot of us to not take matters in our own hands. So I know the finals are going on, and when this publishes, it'll be game day. And obviously that's amazing, but there's some other stuff going on in basketball. And I thought I would come to you gents to talk about before we get to the finals. So I've been immersed in Team USA for the last 10 days. And obviously it's so unusual for Team USA to be happening parallel to this. It's sort of a surreal world. But I have to say, like, last night to me right now, Sunday night, the US beat Spain. They played their best basketball in the second half they've shown. And it was at the Mandalay Bay, or the arena at Mandalay Bay. And there was about maybe 8,000 or 9,000 fans there, which is pretty good for any exhibition game, particularly sort of an odd time on the calendar. And the fans were so into the game, chanting for, you know, when they came back, they were chanting. Keldon Johnson, who was just promoted to the roster, had a great game, and he fouled out. He fouled out with his fifth foul. He had no idea he fouled out. They had to sort of tap him on the shoulder and say, Keldon, you only get 5 in FIBA, have a seat. They gave him like an ovation. Like, they were really, really into it. The women played before the men, and they had a really good crowd at that game. People are, at least anecdotally, on the ground in Vegas, really into this team, and this team is having real challenges. And so I just wanted to start there. So Zach LaVine, who has been one of the positive stories of training camp, one of the things that has been very clear to me, I asked Pop about this last night, and of course he brushed it off, because if Pop doesn't like the question, he can just brush it off and he can get away with it. Other coaches can't, but whatever. The players who are younger and who didn't play in the playoffs, or didn't play as much, the guys who have played the least basketball in the last 2 years, they have much fresher legs, and you can just see it. Just, mm-hmm. just so obvious. Keldon Johnson looks just so much more active. Zach LaVine, who, like, in comparison to like Jason Tatum, has played way less basketball. He looked great. So he goes into protocol. So the Team USA flew to Tokyo. I think they were scheduled to leave at 1 o'clock Vegas time on Monday. They had 8 players.
And one of them is JaVale McGee. That's not the way you want to be traveling to Tokyo for the Olympics.
By the way, they obviously have support staff, coaches and everything, and the women were traveling with them. But they had a 747, and they're taking 8 national team players. Literally a third of the team is still here in the States. So Bontemps, you probably haven't gotten a chance to watch him because you've been traveling with this team with the finals, but this isn't just like, oh, Americans aren't prepared or they don't care or whatever. This is a real, real challenge that's about to happen, and it's going to happen right on the heels of the finals. The finals could end Thursday. Team USA starts on Sunday.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And we talked about this a little bit last week. You know, you look around these international teams, and these are no longer the Americans going up against a bunch of guys who are overawed by playing them and, you know, maybe just seen them on TV and that's it. I mean, you're talking about teams like Spain, Australia, France. They're full of NBA players or guys like, you know, in France's case, Nado Dekolo, who spent a bunch of years in the NBA before going over to play in Europe and is arguably the best player in Europe now. So these are teams that have guys that are not fazed by playing the stars on the American teams. And on top of that, there are also teams that have had these guys back with them year after year after year, in some cases for over a decade, in some cases two decades. I mean, I did get a chance to watch that game on Sunday night and seeing Pau Gasol out there running pick and rolls with Ricky Rubio. I mean, we were watching that literally 15 years ago, and these guys are back playing together again in the Olympics. I mean, it's
Luis Scola kind of, is still getting buckets for Argentina. Still getting buckets.
Yeah, he's played for them for 20 years.
First off, Scola is ripped for a 41-year-old. He's ripped, and he was the best player on Argentinians team when the Americans played him. Well, Scola would be getting minutes for the American team.
Dude, yeah. You remember when France knocked out USA in the World Cup a couple years ago, Scola took it to Gobert and the French dudes in the championship game then.
Yes, he did. No, and look, but that's the difference, right? Like, in the American guys have talked about it a bunch. This group of guys has never played together before. And they're coming in after this long season. They play like two pack practices, and then they're just getting rolling the ball out there against teams like even Nigeria. Those guys aren't rotation players in the NBA. They've got seven or eight guys who play in the league who are not going to be afraid to go up against a Bam Adebayo. I mean, there were three Heat guys on Nigeria's national team. They're not worried about playing Bam. They practice against him every day. So, you know, it's just not the old, hey, Team USA is going to roll the ball out and win by 30. They still should win the gold medal. They still are clearly the best team, but it's not as simple as just throw these guys together and it's going to work, because these other teams have all this chemistry and built up history and cohesion that these guys don't have, on top of the fact that Devin Booker, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday are three of the seven or eight best players on the team. And they're still playing here in Milwaukee in the finals.
Well, plus it's a Space Jam summer, so LeBron can't take part.
That's right.
Right.
You know, that complicates matters.
So, and you made a comment to it. So you may say, why is JaVale McGee? Why did he make the roster? Why wasn't it Trae Young? I know that's been a popular thing. And we asked Craig Popovich about it. And of course he doesn't like the question. So he responds to, it was a logical choice. Like, I think he even said it was the most logical choice.
He's got to come up with a better answer than that, because I'm sorry. Well, taking a backup center, then put him on Team USA. Don't tell me it's a logical choice. You have to explain the logic.
My answer would be, he's the guy who said he would come, and so he's on the team.
Hard time believing Christian Wood said he wouldn't come.
Christian Wood, would have come, but they went with JaVale McGee first. And so, you know, like, here's the thing. Kevin Durant playing in this for this team is enormous. Getting Durant's pledge very well could turn out to be the difference between them winning the gold and not. Although he's just been okay in the exhibition games, but considering what he's been through, and that, you know, he's playing 48 minutes a game or 50 minutes in those games a few weeks ago, I mean, I'm not going to judge him in the exhibition games.
Yeah.
But as a result, he's basically got, I'm not saying he's picking the players, but his input.
Well, JaVale JaVale McGee is good friends with Kevin Durant and Draymond Green. Right. So.
Hold on. DeAndre Jordan's got fresh legs. Didn't play all playoffs. What is KD not close with DeAndre anymore? He got him a $40 million deal.
I mean, you know, I don't know. I want to say this very clearly. I do not know how much of an input that Durant had with the Kevin Love pick. But you could make a conspiracy there about what could happen with Love. And the Love pick was a mistake, which the first person to admit that was Kevin Love. And he actually did them a favor. In my view, he did them a favor by saying, hey, you know, he said his calf was bothering him. Like, 3 days earlier, he was saying he wasn't hurt and he was feeling great. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but I think he looked and said, we can't afford to have a roster spot that is a, is they can't be played. And so he did them a favor.
So they added JaVale McGee.
But you know what? Like, I mean, I'd rather, with where Love was physically, I would rather have JaVale. And so the thing is, when you watch his team play, because I know people are like, well, why isn't Trae Young playing? Why isn't Trae Young playing? Well, because they have perimeter depth. Of course, it's easy to say that half their, you know, half their perimeter depth is sitting in the United States right now.
Yeah.
Because Booker, Drew Holiday and LaVine and Middleton can obviously play too. He's more of a 3-4 in the international game, but it's not with them. But what's happening, this team is small. And the teams that are playing are attacking them on the inside. The Australians who beat them just really went after them at the rim. And even last night, JaVale didn't play. They went to Mark and Pau at the rim over and over and over. And it wasn't like Mark yeah. and Pau had great games, but they were setting up the rest of their offense. And I really think they didn't. I mean, is Trae Young a better player than JaVale McGee? Of course.
Duh.
Of course he is. But they didn't need Trae Young. They have Dame Lillard,
yeah,
who is, you know, frankly, because of his, he's more veteran, is like a slightly elevated Trae Young. They don't need that spot. They needed a guy who could defend the rim because they elected not to go with one, and they went with Love as sort of one of their centers, and it was a fail. So that's why they went with JaVale. Now we could argue about whether it should have been something different, but certainly the relationship with Draymond and Durant played a role. So, so France is Sunday, and Pop said last night that they are not expecting the finals guys to get there until Saturday. So that's, by the way, that's on the ground Saturday after a 6 or 7 game finals with international travel. He even said,
"You can't play him."
Oh, they're gonna play him.
You can't play him Sunday. You can't play him Sunday.
I mean, I can't.
Sure, I'm pretty sure they're going to play.
Pop even said. I mean, but, by the way, this is a ridiculous situation, right? Like I was talking.
McMahon, what choice do they have right now? I mean, they're down all these guys. They got to roll JaVale out there. I don't think so. I think they'd rather have Devin Booker and Drew Holiday coming off the plane and playing rather than playing JaVale. I mean, come on.
So that's what Pop said.
JaVale's tall and can run and jump. Why isn't he as good as Giannis? People say that's the only reason Giannis is any good.
So I asked Pop, I go, Pop, this is ridiculous. This situation is ridiculous. Like, not in a way, I mean, like, there's nothing you can do about it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I don't think Pop has, even going back to 2019, in my view, I don't think Pop has done the greatest job managing the national team. The verdict is the Olympics and we'll see, but this situation he's got is ridiculous. It's preposterous. And I don't know how you put a game plan together. And so you look at the French beat the Americans 2 years ago in the World Cup. As you guys mentioned, they have Batum, they have Nando DiColo, they have Gobert, they have, Evan Fournier, who's playing despite being a free agent. They have, TLC from the Nets.
They're really good.
They have Frank Ntilikina, also a free agent. But they just lost to Japan yesterday.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen, but, Team USA is going to be a drama. It already is a drama. And, so get ready to shift your viewing over, because starting Sunday, which they play in the morning, it's going to get interesting in their group.
Well, I was just going to say the consistent through line for all these guys. And I've talked to scouts about it. I'm sure you have too, Brian, when you're out there, is these guys are just tired. The same goes for the, like, France losing to Japan. All these guys have played for basically 2 years straight. You go to, like, Jason Tatum, these guys who were on the World Cup team in 2019, they basically spent the past 2 calendar years just playing basketball all the time. And they look tired. And you could see, to your point, Keldon Johnson is a good young player for the Spurs, but you saw him in that game against Spain. He looked like he was playing at 2 gears higher than everybody else, just running around making plays because he just had bounce in his legs that the other guys just don't.
And Spain is so old. They have a young kid on their roster who I'm now forgetting his name.
Usman Garuba is going to be a draft pick this year's draft.
And there was a bunch of scouts at the game last night. You know, it's a big game when Mike Schmidt shows up. big game. So they have him, but the rest of their guys all have gray hair. Spain. And the Spain is the reigning world champs. That was a quality win that the U.S. had. They actually looked like a Team USA for a while there. But the other thing that's going to be strange about this is that free agency and the draft and transaction season is going to happen while these guys are over there. And I thought it was
Are there some things to talk about with that, Brian, with Team USA?
Jeez.
Well, it got a little less complicated when Bradley Beal unfortunately had to leave because of COVID. I felt bad for Brad. We were talking to him in the, you know, we had some good access, and he was just talking about how much he wanted to do this. And like literally the next day tested positive. And by the way,
he's been friends with Jason Tatum for years. They were really excited about playing together. Yeah. A couple guys from St. Louis. It's a real bummer.
By the way, Brad was wearing a mask, which was important because we were all wearing masks and we were not that far from him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were outside the 6 feet zone or whatever, but, you know, I immediately, like within seconds of him leaving, went up and like did TV right from where he was sitting. And we know I don't know if he had the Delta variant, but we obviously know the Delta variant is nothing to be messed with. And so thank goodness he'd been wearing a mask because that protected everybody, including his teammates. You know, I've tested negative several times since then, but I wasn't technically close enough to be a close contact, but it was enough to wonder. And so that's, you know, a real thing. And that's a real thing for the finals too. Make sure everybody is able to play for game 6 or 7. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, so Bradley Beal is not going to be there. I don't necessarily know if anything was going to happen with him, but it was out there. And then we obviously have the Dame Lillard stuff where there continues to be stories and rumors about him. And he continues to basically give, he has now twice since he's come to Team USA, basically given non-denials about.
All right, he's given not yet is what he's given.
Right.
And so that's the question. The question really is when, and then it becomes where. And so it's when, and then I guess how much influence will he have over where? Because it is unique for, you know, the fact that he signed that extension that's just about to kick in. You know, we've seen guys push their way out with 2 years left, but, you know, four, that's a long contract that, you know, and that obviously would take away from his leverage, but I mean, listen, it very much feels like he is in late stage Minnesota KG territory right now. I believe him when he says his preference would be to spend his whole career in Portland, but it's a harsh realization that, hey, I've given it my best shot and there's just not a realistic pathway to the Trailblazers going from a perennial playoff team to a real championship contending team. Even the year they made the West Finals, they weren't a real, I mean, they got swept in the West Finals. So it's
obviously he's trying to put pressure on them to do something drastic, but even doing something drastic, it's hard to see.
Well, it's like you said, McMahon, we talked before the playoffs started, right? About that series they had with Denver. They're playing a shorthanded Denver team in the first round of the playoffs. And this is a moment for the Blazers to either, you know, make a run and show Dame they're good enough to contend, especially after trading for Robert Covington last year. That was the big move they made, right? Or they were going to lose to the Denver team that didn't have any other guards available. And they were, and it was a moment that could be clarifying for Dame, right? And what did he say in that press conference? We lost to a shorthanded Denver team. And that told me a lot, right? Like you look at the Blazers compared to the Suns, compared to the Lakers, compared to the Mavericks, compared to Denver, who they lost to when they get healthy. You look at all these teams, they're not nearly as good as those teams. I mean, and it's hard to
throw the Jazz in there, Suns.
Right. I forgot about Utah. Right. There's several teams in the West, at least. And that's for you to get to teams like Golden State, who are probably going to be better next year when they get Clay back. If he's
close to and teams that are on the rise, you know, the Grizzlies of the bunch. Yeah. I mean,
you just look at it and say, how is this team going to be better than first round cannon fodder? Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to see it, which, you know, to your point about the when, like this all seems to be Dame saying, to your point, we're going to wait a few weeks, we're going to see what happens at the beginning of August for agency. And if this team doesn't look a lot better, I'm going to have some conversation with the Blazers. It feels like that's what this is coming down to. What happens then, if anything can.
And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, even if he says to them, okay, hey, you know, I need to go. It doesn't necessarily mean it happens before the season. I mean, this could be something that lingers for a while. People knowing Damian Lillard didn't want to be important anymore, but you know, they can't, like, you can't rush into a franchise changing trade. And again, I am curious, you know, would they work off of a list of his preferred destinations, or would they open it up to all bidders? You know, would they open it up, say, hypothetically, New Orleans with Brandon Ingram and a bunch of picks wants to get involved there? You know, I don't know if that's a situation Damian Lillard would want to be in or not, but it's certainly if I'm Neil Olshey and I'm in a place where I have to trade Dame Lillard, I want to be able to have conversations with the Pelicans, because I think that's a, you know, there are deals that could be made that would make sense for the Blazers.
So Dame's living in a world where he's watching the Bucks, who made the home run trade for Drew, and the Suns, who wasn't quite the same investment in terms of their future, but it was a home run swing trade for Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the Lakers going all in for Anthony Davis. He's seeing these teams make all in moves. He turned 31 last week.
And I think Raptors went and got Kawhi 2 years ago, won the title.
Right. Wasn't a full swing there, but obviously a big time, you know, going for it. You know, it was a big time swing in that it was a 1 year thing. They didn't trade away their whole future, but it was a big time swing.
But they traded away a co-star. I mean, DeMar DeRozan was
you're right.
One of those players in Raptors history. It's all teams that made big swings to try to go for it. And the Blazers haven't to the same degree.
Right. So he's sitting there. So the Blazers weren't able to trade a first recently, but now that their pick is going to convey, as soon as this draft is over with, they can trade, I believe, their next, not next, but I believe they have the capability to trade 4 first round picks. Not that you would want to trade them all in one transaction, but I don't know. And they have some other talent on their roster. They don't have like the prime player that everybody wants. I mean, CJ McCollum is obviously very good, but if you trade CJ, you're losing your second best player. So the guy you get back better be damn good. So I think Dame is definitely holding their feet to the fire. That is definitely what is happening. So I think the issue for the Blazers is Dame appears to be on the fence. So they're sitting there. Now they don't have any picks in this draft, but they obviously, if they were willing to trade Dame now, they could potentially get incredible assets starting with this draft. Or if they're going to try to go get a player in this draft, they could trade some of those future picks and the transaction could happen later. And then they're going to go into free agency. And if they have to go all out in free agency, obviously they don't have cap space, but they would go all in with their picks potentially to pull something off. You know, I think they need Dame to be signed in. You know, that's
and you say he's on the fence. I mean, on the fence, I don't get the vibe that he is straddling the fence.
maybe he's kind of hanging on and hasn't quite dropped yet. But I think it, certainly the momentum is carrying him towards the other side of the fence. I think
We've been talking about this on the pod for months, right? Ever since the deadline, we've had this conversation on the pod. And the reason why was because we could all see the writing on the wall in Portland. And I think McMahon bringing up Kevin Garnett, I've always thought that's who Dame is reminding me of in this situation, that he was a guy who, if it was up to him, he would stay in Portland his whole career and would love to win a title there and has always wanted to win a title there and been committed to winning a title there. But ultimately, he has to decide. He's 31 years old. He has to decide, can I win a title realistically in Denver or in Portland and really have a shot at this? Or do I have to look and see if I could do that elsewhere? And he also said that during his Team USA press conference that he's getting older and he kind of sees the writing on the wall for.
I thought everything he said in that press conference, obviously, if you're a Knicks fan, your ear is pressed up against the speaker waiting to hear, I want out. Obviously, if you're a Blazers fan, your ear is pressed up to the speaker saying, you know, oh, he said he expects to be back. You know, for somebody who attempts to be a neutral party, I thought Dame was incredibly honest in that.
Yeah.
Where he portrayed a guy who really, really wants to make it work, but is really worried about the clock ticking. I would just say, though, that the Blazers have a very tough situation here.
Mm-hmm.
You need Dame to be invested. Because if you're going with a player on the fence, it affects how you make your decisions. Now, it was interesting the way the Bucks made their move I always want to say summer, but it was actually in November.
Last offseason.
The Bucks made their moves, and it may have looked like they were making their moves as an effort to convince Giannis to stay. And I suppose that wasn't.
And that was definitely part of the moves.
Right. But they made those moves with the belief that Giannis was going to play with those players. They traded for Drew Holiday, seeing Drew Holiday play with Giannis.
Giannis wanted to play with Drew Holiday.
Right. And it was a smart move because it looks like it might be a championship.
Yes.
More than Chris Paul, quite frankly, is what it sounds like happened.
That's definitely true.
So what you need is you need to have clarity of vision that you're going to make these moves knowing that Dame is there. And because you've got him under contract, you know he's there. But the value of Dame Lillard at age 31 with 4 years on his contract is immense. And I know that Dame, if he did ask for a trade, would, like anybody, would want to have some say, but I don't. And I mean, maybe you could argue that the Blazers would owe him that. And, you could have a philosophical discussion about that. You just don't see players of this stature with this time on their contract come available. It's almost unheard of because players tend to force trades when they're near the end of their contracts.
And the contract is long enough too, to where maybe if a team isn't on his preferred list, okay, hey, you know what? Realistically, we can have him here for 2 years. And if we have to trade him again, he would still have value. It's worth the risk to bring up New Orleans.
Tell me why Cleveland wouldn't give their entire roster and all their draft picks and everything for him.
Cleveland, I would say, is because they are – it's not realistic to think Dame vaults them into it. I keep bringing up New Orleans.
I'm not talking about Cleveland specifically. Tell me why Indiana wouldn't. Tell me why
right.
I don't think Memphis would because Memphis has a young franchise player. But, like,
they have a young franchise point guard, to your point.
Right. These mid markets that are not going to be free agent players, this is like an opportunity to acquire a player that's on contract. This never happens. So I don't see why these, a whole bunch of these teams aren't just literally throwing their entire portfolios on the table if this happens. And I don't see how a team that's nearing a championship, which is what Lillard wants, can compete. If it's a square deal, in other words, favoritism.
The one part of this that you're leaving out is that Dame is owed about $200 million over the next 4 years, and he is 31 years old, and he is a small guard, and there is some risk in trading for him that the back end of that could look pretty rough. And I do think that's going to have some teams thinking, hey, does it make sense for, like, say, Cleveland, right? Just as an example, does it make sense for the Cavs to go with everything they have to trade for Dame Lillard, to then have him on the team with nobody else and kind of be a you know, maybe make the playoffs team or maybe be even worse than what Portland is. Like that, you could paint a scenario where that doesn't make a lot of sense for them. But to McMahon's point, whether it's a team like New Orleans or, you know, whether, you know, any of these teams that are good or close to good, like look at Toronto. Toronto was the fourth pick in this year's draft. Does Toronto say, hey, we'll give you the fourth pick, we'll give you a bunch of other stuff, we'll get Dame and have him with Fred VanVleet and Siakam and these guys, and we'll roll forward with that? Like there's it because of the years on his deal, to McMahon's initial point about how much control is Dame going to have on the situation, there are a lot more teams that are going to be in play than the typical, like, I want to go to A or B. I have 18 months left on my contract. I'm just not going to re-sign there. With 4 years, there's a bigger window, but there are still some hangups that I think could keep some teams out of the mix. But it's going to be a wide open frenzy for him because you just don't have top 10 players in the league, to your point, Brian, come on the market with 4 years on their deal and that should be available.
Let me ask you a spontaneous because you're good at seeing this stuff. What move do the Blazers have in them? Is Bradley Beal, like, let's say Bradley Beal asked to, I mean, let's say Bradley Beal asked to be traded. He's got 1 year on his contract. Can they go all in on a guy with 1 year on his contract?
I think they
may be able to acquire him, but I don't know if it's a smart move.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they're pretty low on assets and they're pretty low on guys they can actually trade. I mean, the move everybody yells about is got to trade CJ McCollum. They got to turn CJ McCollum into a better player, but they're sort of in the same position that the Toronto Raptors were in going back to the Kawhi trade, right? They had Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. They had a really good backcourt, but they could only get so far. They were a first, second round team. They got to the conference finals once, got blown out by LeBron. We're not a team that anybody thought was a real championship contender. Well, they got an opportunity because of the unique circumstances surrounding Kawhi to take a home run swing on him. And they figured, hey, if he comes here, maybe we can win a title. If he leaves, then no big deal. But we're not going any farther what we have. And maybe there's a scenario where they can find that type of player. Bradley Beal is an interesting comparison in that standpoint because he is on a short-term deal. And if you could turn CJ McCollum and some stuff into Bradley Beal, that makes your team better. But they're in that kind of position where this team's ceiling is what it is. And there's only a couple avenues they can go to maybe get better. And there's not a lot of guys like Kawhi Leonard in the league. So,
well, other people will bring up Ben Simmons.
CJ for Ben, you know, I don't know that vaults you into contender status. That's a deal that I think makes sense. I think at this point, you know, Ben Simmons' value is as low as it's been, obviously. So maybe that's a deal you can make without mortgaging the future in terms of giving up a ton of draft picks.
I still think they'd have to give up a bunch of draft picks. I mean, CJ's a really good player. CJ's also making $30-something million the next couple of years. I don't see that as a value contract really. So I mean, because for kind of the same reason that Portland's in, right? Like he's a really good complimentary player, but he's not a guy that you look at as being a guy who's going to be a frontline guy on a championship team. You know, if you look at these teams that are playing in the NBA finals, he's not as good as Chris Middleton and Devin Booker. He's a clear level below those kind of guys. So, you know, if you're the Sixers who are trying to get to the NBA finals and Ben Simmons is your one big trade piece at this point, are you trading him for a guy that's a level below him?
Well, and not like CJ McCollum helped his trade value in the playoffs either. It just wasn't as spectacularly disastrous and on his, you know, he stunk on NBA TV. Ben Simmons stunk for the world to see. You know, let's be honest.
They just lost to a team with all their guards hurt, right? And CJ
really struggled.
CJ played his best basketball of his career the first 2 months of last season, though.
For sure, before he got hurt. The thing on Beal, obviously, that is you're going to have to take a huge swing to get Beal. There's no, because it's not like, I mean, you'd be bidding against all kinds of other franchises, obviously.
Well, and at this point, to be clear, the Wizards have shown that neither side there has shown any real willingness to move on. So,
right, okay, whether it's Beal or a huge swing on whoever, if you're taking a huge swing to try to appease a star who you're afraid is going to force his way out, I would look towards the Rockets just as a warning. Okay, they took a huge swing on Russell Westbrook, and a year later, that the bottom fell out, and you know everybody was gone, and you're left praying that the swap rights don't don't bite you in the ass.
Yeah, yeah.
which, you know, hey, at least they're in a full-fledged rebuild now. But you want to talk about going from, you know, trying to, okay, hey, we made this move. Okay, this is what our star wanted. A year later, he's gone anyway.
I mean, I think the difference is that if the Blazers do make a big swing, I think Dame would be – I don't think there's any issue with Dame being committed if there's a guy that's going to be wanting to stay there that he is cool with them getting, right? I don't think it's going to be
– But if they get knocked out in the first round anyways, it's not about Dame wanting to leave Portland. We understand that. It's about him right. – like you said, he's 31 years old. He realizes he only has, you know, optimistically, say 3-4 years of prime left, although Chris Paul is 36, whatever. But, you know, he's looking at his basketball mortality and you know, at some point it's, okay, loyalty's cool, but, man, I just want a realistic chance to contend. And so, you know, if they take a huge swing and there's still a first-round exit, which is a very realistic possibility in the Western Conference, I just don't know that it necessarily changes much as it just pushes, you know, kind of kicks the can down the road a year.
As we've talked about, this is why it's complex. This is why Dame is such a it's such a delicate and nuanced thing. It's just not simple, which is why he is clearly conflicted about it.
Yeah, and look, it's in no way, shape, or form any kind of negative reflection of his character. I don't blame Dame for, you know, I believe everything he says.
I don't blame Dame for anything. Nothing he said.
And I believe everything he said. He really wanted to be a one franchise guy.
Yeah.
And look, you know, you can look at Giannis, and Giannis committed to the Bucks, and he's about to get rewarded with a championship, it looks like. It's one thing to do it at 26. It's another thing to do it at 31.
That rumor from Henry Abbott comes out in the morning, and within, I don't know, 90 minutes, Dame is scheduled to speak on the record to the media.
Yeah.
Cause he had said, if you're going to hear something, you're going to hear it directly from me. And, that was, I was certainly pleasantly surprised. And then the way he handled it right out of the gate, he just like, let's get the questions over right now.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Before we go, I do think we should look into Game 6. McMahon, that sometimes Bontemps, he's known to make a prediction, a bold prediction or two.
He's kind of an anti-Wendy in that way.
That's true. Sometimes he's big wrong, but sometimes he's big right. And he pretty boldly said he thought the Bucks had this figured out. When did you think that was the case, Bontemps? You've thought the Bucks have been in good position here for a while, even though the Suns were awesome in game 1 and 2. You've been on that train.
They figured out after game 2.
We got a saying down here in Texas, the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while. Well, the Bontemps' face is very bright right now. Put it like that.
You know, championship teams historically, there's a road win that happens where you're just like, wow. Sometimes it happens in the second round, you know, sometimes it happens in the finals, but a road win happens where you're like, how, like that elevated them to another level. And that was the kind of win that, the Bucks had. And, you know, there was a whole bunch of different things. You know, we talked to Nick Nurse on our crossover pod after the game, and Nick's instinct was that, you know, there's a lot of basketball left, but as I watched it, I should yield to the coach. That's why we have him on. But as I watched it, I think some of the stuff that Milwaukee has going, it's just going to be hard for Phoenix. It's just going to be hard for the way that they're, the game plan that they've developed, that Bud has developed through this thing, it's pretty good.
Well, an old dog Butt Bontemps did say, I think last week, that if all three of the Bucks stars play well, it's the series is a wrap. And that's what happened in Phoenix the other night. You know, Giannis, by his standards, was kind of ho-hum. 32-9-6. Middleton was great, especially. And then that was the Jrue Holiday game, right? That game is why they gave up all the picks and the swaps and made Jrue Holiday the priority. That was an absolutely dominant two-way performance. And he made, if the Bucks close this out, the first play everybody will think of after the series 10 years from now, 20, 30, 40, 50 – will be him ripping Devin Booker on one end and then throwing the lob to Giannis for the exclamation point alley-oop on the other end. I mean, it was, you know, that's why they went out and got Jrue Holiday.
Didn't the NBA announce, I may not have this exactly right, that there were 50 million views 50 million. Of that play?
Yeah. I mean, it's just an unbelievable play. It's you know, the cojones factor of a throw in the pass, but just like when he – Booker goes in there and Giannis and maybe I forget who was the primary defender.
PJ was guarding him.
Giannis comes over to help. Right. There's a yep. wall. He spins out of it. Holiday times it perfectly. Gambles. Now Booker, you know, our buddy Tom Haderstroh has pointed out Booker does not have a fourth quarter assist in this series. So, you know, a gamble with good odds, but gambles
comes off a Chris Paul in
right.
a huge spot.
And just times it perfectly. Rips away when he made that steal. I screamed wow, much less.
So did everybody on press row in Phoenix. Yeah. Like
and then Giannis runs about, he looks like Usain Bolt running down the floor. And just an absolutely spectacular play. I mean, you know, think of where Giannis was for him to beat everybody down the floor at 6'11" after playing 40 whatever minutes. I mean, the guy's—he really is just an absolute.
It is. It's so
athlete.
Strange the way Giannis looks winded early.
Yes,
but then stamina. LeBron has
well,
talked
just
about
so
this.
Amped up. He's so wow. amped up in, for these games. It's just—it's really just that he just gets LeBron, so into the game. He has to take a second to catch himself.
LeBron has talked about this for years. You know, he calls it the second wind. So he comes out in the game and he, you know, he plays and he feels like he tires himself out and he just sort of has to wait until, you know, he would say, I got to catch my second wind. And it seems that way. I mean, I know he said he had to go to the bathroom, but come on, you looked at him. He clearly was just, yeah. you know, hyperventilating. He wasn't having to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, no, he was just amped up. And look, this series to me was simple from the beginning. Giannis is the best player by a country mile in the series, right? So, and he is, once we knew he was healthy after that first game when he kind of just casually had 20-17 as he wasn't really trying to push it in transition, you knew he was going to have a big game every game. So to me, this very simply came down to the Chris Paul and Devin Booker could dramatically outplay Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday.
Which they did the first two games.
Which they did in game two. And remember, Phoenix went 20 for 40 from three-point range in that game and got 17 corner three-point attempts and made 10 of them, both of which are completely insane. Since then, that matchup has either been in the Bucks' favor or it's been even every game. No matter, and for as well as Devin Booker's played, and he's played great, he's no better than Chris Middleton. They're the same level player. And Chris Middleton's been just as good. Mm-hmm. And Jrue Holiday is the best man-to-man defender in the league at the guard spot. And the reason this series has turned is because after the insanity in game one, of having Chris Paul guarded by PJ Tucker, which didn't make any sense. They put him on Chris Paul And Phoenix's offense has become the Devin Booker show. And as good as Devin Booker is, he's really, really good. When he is just scoring and making these tough Kobe shots, their offense bogs down and gets stagnant, and their team does not play as well.
This is a little bit crude, what I'm about to say. But like the way Chris Paul's played, especially in the second half, it reminds you of the Ricky Rubio point guard Suns, where it was all Devin Booker and sometimes they won, but a lot of times they lost. You know, because Chris Paul hasn't been a playmaking difference maker, especially in the second half of these games. And the thing is, he keeps denying his hand is an issue. And I mean, it's hard to tell how it affects him
until he pulls LeBron and shows up to the post-series press conference with a cast on.
Well,
I think you could look at
LeBron's stats in that series and see the downward curve. And if you look at Chris Paul's stats in this series, there's a downward curve.
Yeah. And except for turnovers, those things spiked in three straight games, which Drew Holiday has a lot to do with that.
Yes, he does. And that's what I think it is. They have been pushing Drew to pick him up full court these past few games. And you can just see as the game goes on, Chris just gets tired. He gets worn down. Like, people don't realize that watching at home, Drew Holiday is a really big guard.
He's a linebacker.
He's built like a linebacker. And like if you watch him on offense, like Devin Booker is 6'5". He's a big guy. And Drew Holiday will start like banging into him and kind of backing him down into the lane and scoring. Like he moves around anybody that's guarding him. And he's doing the same thing when he's picking up Chris Paul and just banging him and banging him and banging him and banging him all the time. Like, there's a reason Chris is only playing 35, 36 minutes in these games. These are really hard physical minutes. And those guys for the Bucks they're the reason that they're in this position. Those guys matching the Suns guys. Because again, Giannis is up here and Giannis is getting whatever he wants. And so for the Suns to win, they've got to make threes, which the Bucks have taken away since game two. And they need Devin and Chris to play out of their minds. And for as good as Devin's been, Chris has not been as good. And they're going to both have to play really, really well. They're going to have to make a ton of shots if they're going to come in here and win this game six on Tuesday night.
And even Jeff Teague, when they put him in the game in the first half, and it doesn't always work out.
Oh,
His assignment, the reason they got him out there.
Is because it's a bad decision.
The reason they got him out there is to be a goddamn target for the other team.
Well,
lost game five because they had Jeff Teague out there in the first quarter for seven minutes.
They got
minutes
down by 97 points.
That's right. They was like, hey, Jeff Teague, we're going to go with Jeff Teague every single play. You know what? We're going to score every single play.
I know, but when
Bontemps
you watch
is going to blow his microphone out. He's so fired up.
He is. I know. But when you watch,
I watched Jeff Teague not be able to play for the Boston Celtics and get benched for Peyton Pritchard, and now he's in Game Five of the NBA Finals in the first quarter, trying to guard Chris Paul and Devin Booker.
Just calm down for a second. It backs up what you were saying.
I know it does. But it still is a bad idea.
If you watch the way Jeff Teague plays, he has obviously been instructed to bump the hell out of Chris Paul all the way up the court.
That's correct.
He is not as good at that. We know that's not breaking news, but you can tell that even when Holiday's out of the game, they want to make Chris Paul feel the physicality. It doesn't work as 100%. Well, but you can see that's the way it works.
100% of the time they're doing that. Whenever Chris is on the court, they're banging him every second.
And they're trying to target him as much as they can defensive and trying to get him, whether it's switched on to Middleton, which he just shoots over him, switched on to Holiday, which that's when he goes in his bully ball, back him down.
I kind of want to go back and address Bontemps saying that Middleton and Booker are on the same level, but
yeah,
I just don't have time. I don't have time.
Middleton's been a great closer.
Why don't we have time?
Because I have to be places.
Because he has a life.
Wow.
Hey, he's got 2 days at home till he heads to Tokyo. I know you've been on the road for a while, but your wife doesn't want you around anyway.
I mean, there have been times in this series where Chris Middleton, I said the other night, he's morphed into Scottie Pippen at times in this series.
I have no problem saying Chris Middleton, Devin Booker are similar players. I think they're both terrific players.
Booker's a better player. Booker's putting up 40 a game these last couple games, and they've lost.
40 the game before.
On 33 shots. I mean, he was great in crunch time, and he's been great in crunch time this series.
By the way, can people please stop saying Middleton should be considered for Finals MVP if the Bucks win this? Like, just stop it.
We're not gonna entertain that discussion. But I do real quick want to talk about Giannis, and we talked a ton about him last week going into Game 4 about how like kind of locked in he's been, and Brian has used the Matrix moment metaphor comparing to LeBron a couple different times during these playoffs, and
the Matrix being is around him.
That's right. Being around him these past couple series every game and seeing where he's at mentally, especially in the wake of the injury, like it's been really fascinating to watch him in these press conferences, which I know people can watch him on TV, but we're actually able to be around the players again. And to see him every day, he comes in and he's just unbelievably relaxed. Doesn't matter if they win, doesn't matter if they lose, doesn't matter if it's a practice day, whatever. He comes in and he's engaging. And he's loose and carefree and isn't caught up in what's going on.
And he's wise. He's continuing the centuries long tradition of wise Greek philosophers.
I mean, that's like, remember Dirk McMahon, he would come in and that series against the Heat and he would take the microphone.
He always does.
Off.
He'd take the mic.
Yep.
Take the microphone off. Big and sigh. He leaned back and he just like, okay, let's hold court here.
He's just chilling. Now, honestly, they're basketball wise, obviously they're completely different players, but there's so much about Giannis that reminds me of Dirk, just in kind of his personality, his mentality, his approach. There's a kind of a genuine humility, obviously, you know, the loyalty. There's really just a lot of, he just reminds me so much. And obviously I was around Dirk on a regular basis covering him, but Giannis from afar reminds me so much of Dirk for all those reasons. You know, again, not basketball, completely, totally different players, but just in terms of that, even their background, you know, these guys both, neither one of them played like high level basketball in Europe. They're both like, you know, second, third division guys, kind of these unknowns who, they're the mysteries of the draft. They're just so similar just in the way that they are the faces of these franchises. He seems to be a very easy guy for people to root for. But despite that, I feel like he gets hated on a lot.
Well, and the thing that stood out about him to me, he does remind me of Dirk too, Tim, even in the journeys had, right? The playoff disappointments he's had and the rough moments he's had. But the thing that's been so interesting about this run, having covered them in the playoffs the last 2 years when they lost both in the bubble and to the Raptors the year before, is this whole team, when they would get in a tight spot, would hyperventilate and collapse. Oh, that was their thing, right? They would get in these moments and they wouldn't handle it and they'd freak out and they would lose. And the difference with that the last couple of years to now is the way Giannis is approaching things. And as the leader of the team, you can just see that kind of calm, collected sense of, we're going to figure it out. It's going to be okay. Doesn't matter what the situation is. We're going to stay in the moment and do our jobs. It's going to work out. That's why they were able to come back and beat the Nets. It's why they were able to overcome him getting hurt against the Hawks. It's why they were down 2-0 against the Suns and came back in this series. It's just there's been no sense of panic at any point in these playoffs from this team.
And there's also not a sense
for him.
We're going
to figure it out all the time.
Yeah, there's not a sense for him of, okay, I've got to take over. I've got to do everything. You know, hey, Chris Middleton's been phenomenal as a closer. A lot of these plays, it's Giannis setting the screen and diving. Giannis, you know, kind of creating space for him.
That's why I keep saying, you know, it's like Pippen-esque. Not that he plays the same role that Pippen does.
Right.
But Pippen and Jordan's skill sets fit together just freaking beautifully.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, Jerry Krause, you know, went out and found Pippen, but, you know, I don't think he ever saw that was it, you know, it just happened. And I just like, I'm watching the two of them play together and I'm like, damn. I mean, some people are making, you know, Shaq and Kobe references because Giannis is playing like Shaq. He's not Kobe, but, you know, he is the incredible second star that every one of these teams that has a megastar needs. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe some people have done a little bit better, the second star a little bit better, but not many. Have been better than this.
And the other thing too, guys, is like, how many times have we seen the team, so many times throughout NBA history, teams have to kind of go through the levels, right? Get in the playoffs and win a game, win a round, win a couple rounds and kind of work through it. Giannis and Chris Middleton have been together for 8 years here in Milwaukee. And you see that on the court. Like, these guys have been through every single situation together. And they know where they're at on the court, and they trust each other implicitly to get the job done. It doesn't mean it's always been up, you know, lollipops and roses. They've talked about the fact that they got after each other at times during their careers. But those guys are just so comfortable with each other and have been through every single possible scenario together. That's the reason why they're on the precipice here. It's like it's all sort of come together for this Bucks team at the right time.
And they've tinkered around them.
Yeah, for sure.
They had to do a lot of tinkering. And, you know, we talked about the Jrue Holiday deal where they had to go all in on that move. You know,
they went and got P.J. Tucker, too.
They went and got P.J. Tucker. Look at that. You know, Connaughton's been – Bobby Portis was a very, you know, not a high profile, but that's been a key acquisition. You know, Lopez.
Lopez off the scrap heap, absolutely.
Right. You know, he really fits well with Giannis. The other thing about
that
Giannis –
that Bobby Portis signing, I couldn't have been – I was not that impressed with it. Especially in the wake of
I'll be the first to say I wasn't either. And he's had some big moments for them. A lot bigger than I would have guessed.
He's been great for them.
Yeah, I mean, especially in this series, he's really played some critical minutes.
You know, I always quote Pat Riley when I talk about you play eight and trust seven. Both these teams are in total play eight, trust seven mode.
Yeah.
By the way, Mr. T, you're not
the Bucks, but they play eight. I mean, they have like six and a half, because there's times that Bobby Portis will be out there and some games he'll have it and some games he'll very quickly not have it and Bud will be yanking him out quick. But yeah, I mean, look, it's those five starters and Pat Connaughton, and it would be those guys, Pat Connaughton, Dante DiVincenzo, he's hurt, but that's who they've got. And the Suns basically have their five guys and then Campaign and a little bit of Torrey Craig, and that's who they've got.
Cam Johnson's.
Oh no, I totally forgot about Cam Johnson. Yeah. Right, he's 100% there. He's
play eight
really
and trust seven. That's what you do at this level.
Yeah.
All right, guys, thanks for doing it. Next time we talk, I'll be in Japan.
Are you're still going to give us the time of day when you're in Japan?
The time of day? It's going to be the middle of the night when I'm.
You're going to do it on our schedule?
Seems unlikely to me.
I don't know. We just found out that we have to do a 3-day quarantine when we get there, which wasn't a part of the original deal, and so I'm in danger of not being able to go to the France game. It's taking people 8 hours to be processed when they land, and this is just what the Japanese are doing to try to keep the game safe, and there are still infected people getting in. So
you don't want to know the circumstances of the time it took me 8 hours to get processed.
On that note, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective. Enjoy game six, and Zach Lowe and I will be on afterwards with a special guest. We got a couple oars in the water. We'll see who we end up getting. And thank you, McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you to our producer, Jackson. We'll talk to you later this week.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.